My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Taking you up to 6 o'clock today on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Nats in Baltimore to take on the Birds. Regional rivalry set to flame back up in Baltimore at Camden Yards tonight. The exclusive sponsor of this show is the law firm Condori & Murrond. Guide you and your family in the right direction is what they want to do. They're going to help you draft a will, set up a trust, create a healthcare power of attorney, schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you and you will get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. They're going to take good care of you. All of our coverage today on The Fan is brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com. You're clear. Home improvement choice. We're going to catch up with Ian Valentino of the 33rd team in just a moment, who is the analyst who covers the NFL draft for them and who has been ranking and breaking down performances of rookies this week out of the preseason. We're still not really sure how to make bones on everything that we're seeing. I think you just take everything with a grain of salt and keep it moving, but you're either going to feel good or bad coming out of outings. And I think if you're Washington with the guys we saw,
yep,
Jaden Daniels, Ben Sinnott, even Luke McCaffrey, probably. Certainly Mikey Sandra still, to a lesser extent, because he didn't play a lot. I think a couple of plays, one drive, looked physical. All systems are go. I feel good about what we saw. Johnny Newton did not play. We didn't get to see Brandon Coleman, so there's some health concerns here. But for the guys that were on the field, let's go.
Yeah, passing grade. Doesn't mean that the semester grade is done. Doesn't mean that the final exam has been aced. Doesn't put anybody in a gold jacket. Just means the sample we've got, you passed, and there's more to come. There's more upside. There's, you know, certainly some potential there. Like, especially with, I mean, obviously, Jaden Daniels notwithstanding, we talked about that a lot. We should. But what Ben Sinnott showed, I think, was really validating and encouraging and fun. Whether that translates to, you know, 7 targets a week or something like that, I don't think anybody's doing that. But the fact is, when called upon, he can be an asset. And that's kind of what he was drafted to be, right? That Kyle Juszczyk, you know, George Kittle hybrid that Adam Peters evoked, that was really encouraging.
But I love the work of the 33rd team and what they're building, and their draft expert and college football analyst put together a list with grades of how some of the top quarterbacks in round one fared this past weekend. Ian Valentino joins us now to discuss that on G&D. Ian, it's good to talk to you in D.C. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
Doing very well, buddy. Thanks for making some time for us. So let's just kind of go through the rankings first, and then we can circle back to some other rookie things. Caleb Williams got an A-. You watched the performance closely. What'd you see?
Yeah, you just saw a lot of what we saw in USC translate, like a lot of the good things, right? Like, you saw the confidence. You saw somebody that didn't panic. You saw someone that wanted to execute the offense and kind of knew what he was going to do pre-snap, and then he adjusted quickly post-snap whenever things weren't necessarily maybe as expected. And I think that controlled chaos that he tends to thrive in, he's got to find that balance between executing the scheme and executing that inner playmaker. And I think he did a really nice job of it. It was only 2 drives, but the accuracy was there. The quick decision-making was there. And it wasn't somebody that felt like the moment was too big for him and he needed to do too much. But you could definitely see like the arm talent, the accuracy, all of the things that we really loved at USC were on full display.
Right down the line, let's go Jaden Daniels. What did you see? Only a couple of passes, but one was pretty spectacular to have the town buzzing.
Yeah. It's hard to overlook the deep throw, right? Like, that was perfect, and that's exactly why they drafted him. His deep accuracy is special, and his confidence in the pocket, he faced some pressure on that play and delivered a perfect throw downfield. And then you saw the read option, same thing. It's a matter of consistently making the right decision for him. His explosiveness is going to take him, you know, a long, long way in the league. So all he's got to do is execute the basic reads, and he's going to go pretty far just with that. And then as his career advances, he'll obviously continue to do more. But, yeah, he missed a screen pass. That might just be a little bit of a miscommunication as to where the back was supposed to be. You don't worry about those things. But you like what you saw in a couple of plays for sure.
Yeah, and that's the key, I think. You said a couple of plays. He threw the ball three times. One was the amazing dime down the field 42-yard completion. One was an errant 600-mile-an-hour screen where he had some jitters, it seemed like, on the first throw. And then the other was a wide receiver screen that he got out to Terry McLaurin on time. But it was quite literally three reps, basically, that we're going to break down and analyze from all angles. I mean, I guess two-parter here in terms of both sample size and then just relevance to what's going to happen in the regular season. I heard Aaron Rodgers today talking about how you never see legitimate regular season coverages in the preseason from secondaries. When we look at these quarterback performances, how much should we actually take out of them?
I don't think you take too much as far as the complexity of things. Like, you want to see someone confident, but at the same time, we've seen how many quarterbacks, especially third stringers, I mean, even Joe Milton, in this past week looked like a superstar. And we know that he's not really that guy, right? Like, it's a little bit of backyard football there. So you want to see confidence to be able to just go out there and play loose and be able to react quickly to what you're seeing. But at the same time, you can't go too far with it because I think he's right. A lot of these teams aren't really game planning. And as an offense, you're giving your quarterback a couple of things, right? You're giving him two screens and you're giving him maybe the chance to throw deep. And that's all you're really writing. And so if you have to go off of that script, yeah, maybe you're testing your guy, but it's really just to get the speed. You want to see the speed of the game. You want him to get hit so that he gets hit for the first time by an NFL defender, and then you just kind of work past that, and then you bring it back, and you're like, all right, now that we got X, Y, and Z accomplished, let's start to build off of that. So I like the mindset of we try to build, and we continue to try to do positive things and stack those things as opposed to throwing too much on a guy's plate, because at this level, it's so simple that if they really struggle, you don't want that to snowball.
Drake May, I think you graded him as a D. He was 2 for 3, 19 yards through two screens. I guess you really didn't like that incompletion.
Yeah, I tried to preface it with, look, this is a tiny sample size. But that miss was exactly in college what we saw when things didn't go well for May. So for him, it's like, yeah, it's one throw. But at the same time, while it's only one throw, it's a mechanical thing for him. And it's a matter of, you can't make those throws and miss those throws when it's 5 feet over a receiver's head. It's nice that he knew where to go. It's good that he, everything looks good until the throw. For him, it's just a matter of, we know this is a weakness of his. He's got to address it. It might just be like that nerves thing where you're throwing, 100 miles per hour on that route, but he's got to curtail that. So it's one of those meaningless things where the next game, maybe he's almost perfect. But it is one of those things that you just kind of want to see progress over time. And it's kind of funny. Most of these rookies actually showed a little bit of their weaknesses from college, especially when they had more than three throws. But that's just how these things tend to go. But, yeah, May, it's a lot, that you can't really take away from the two throws. But the third, it was more like, okay, like, I want to see you build off of that moving forward.
Ian Valentino, 3013, with us here on Grant and Danny. Let's go to J.J. McCarthy. Unfortunately, now we know, bad news. He'll be done for quite some time. But that initial preseason performance, a couple really nice throws in there, pretty prolific, the most gaudy numbers, I think, of any of the rookies. Graded a B. What'd you see?
Yeah, so he had the best and he had the worst, I think, of everyone else. Like, when he missed big. He threw a bad interception, threw it right to the defender, tried to do too much. His first miss of the, I think it was his first throw, he had a pretty bad miss as well, just put too much heat on it. And that's kind of who he is, where it either works perfectly or it doesn't work at all. Now, he recovered that next drive and had some beautiful passes where leathered that ball perfectly, put it right over a defender, dropped it into the bucket, got receivers big plays downfield, not only had a deep touchdown, but also converted a couple of plays where if you can't feather that ball and have that much control of the ball, you're not going to be a very good quarterback in the NFL. You have to be able to put that touch on the ball, manipulate that ball how you want to. It looked very clean and effortless for him. I think physically his traits looked great. He's got a great arm. There's no doubt about it. He's got mobility. So you saw a lot of the good things. I think once he calmed down and tried to play within himself a little bit more, that's going to be that balance when he does eventually get back, whether it's this year or next year. But I really liked what I saw, and I like that he bounced back. You almost want to see that in the preseason, because in the preseason, the interceptions really don't matter. Even Stetson Bennett throwing four picks, unless if it's something like that. Anything that's short of that, though, it's like you want to see someone face a little bit of adversity and come back. And he really had a mindset of, I don't really care what I just did. I'm just going to keep throwing these balls. And he did, and he came back and looked great.
Kirk Cousins did not play for the Falcons. They're putting him in some bubble wrap until the start of the season, perhaps. So that meant a lot of play for Michael Penix. We got a good long look at him. What did you make of Penix's pro debut?
Yeah, I only gave him a C+, but it was mainly because, to me, that means he did what I expected. He looked the part mentally. So every snap that he took, when he dropped back, he was decisive. He acted as if nothing was a surprise from the Dolphins. He knew where his guys were supposed to be, and he looked more in control, I think, than any other quarterback that we saw. So, and some of that should be expected because he's so experienced and he threw the ball so many times the last couple of years at Washington, and he had so many different looks. So it's a lot of respect to that coaching staff to put him in that position, but they went a lot of 4 and 5 wide, makes things a little bit easier for him to see. I expect Washington to kind of do the same this season with Jaden Daniels, make it easier pre-snap for him. For Penix, it was a matter of executing. So when he hits those throws, they look perfect when he hits them. But when he misses, there's something off that's causing him to miss it. And he doesn't quite have the arm that some of these other guys have to be able to maybe skip part of the process, right? Like his balance has to be great. His footwork has to be great. He has to throw in rhythm. If he doesn't do those things, he misses. And he had a couple of those misses. And so you want to see him eventually. He's going to have to get to the level where he's so consistent with those things that it doesn't matter and almost become robotic. But that's a tough thing to do, and that takes generally several years if it ever comes at all. But good debut for him. To me, he played exactly like he did in college, which is a very good thrower of the football, not necessarily a great playmaker.
So, Ian, finally, if you need somebody to throw it short, I got a guy for you. His name is Bo Nix, and he is here to check it down and throw it within a handful of yards of the line of scrimmage. That's kind of what you're going to get, and I think we saw that. 15 for 21, 125 yards and a touchdown. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, I gave him a B- in the sense of, he moved the offense. He didn't take a sack. He did exactly what he did at Oregon, and that's, like you said, it's not really pushing the ball downfield. A lot of it looked worse than, I think, the result. So it's process versus result. He had happy feet. He's backing out of the pocket. You worry as soon as that ball comes out because where is it going to go? But then it stuck to his receiver's chest. And so it's this weird dichotomy of how do you grade guys like that? And it's like, obviously, we want a perfect process, and generally that's going to bear better results long term. But then, you look at it and it's like, man, I'm watching Bo Nix and this guy doesn't put any confidence in me. So it's a tough position. I think that from a coaching staff perspective, you're happy that he moved the ball downfield. They were crushed last year by sacks. Russell Wilson took so many sacks last year. For him to not take sacks, he didn't make throw an interception, though that first throw was pretty close. He did have a touchdown dropped. I would say it was a decent performance from Nix. It's one of those things where he just is who he is to a T. And so I don't know what that means for his upside. I think he is a guy who can start pretty early, but I don't know that leads you to like an overly good quarterback. Maybe he's an average guy throughout his career. And I just think his career is going to look like this, where it's really odd in some ways, and it's going to be kind of off-putting, but the stats might look pretty good. So it almost reminds me of like a Ryan Tannehill type, where it's like, you don't really want to watch him do what he's doing, but then you look at the result and it's like, okay, you'll take 65% completion rate.
Ian Valentino's with us on Grant and Danny. We just got done with week one of the preseason, and we've been discussing Jaden Daniels. Wanted to get his insight, college football, NFL draft, for the 33rd team What are your year one expectations for Daniels?
I think it's to be establishing that floor. So we know that the explosive plays are going to come, but you don't want him to be defined by those explosive plays. You want to see him make the adjustment to the speed of the league, make the adjustment to having, I mean, he's got a pretty good receiving core. I think this is a good team. I think the offense is going to be interesting, but he doesn't have that LSU supporting cast where everyone was just around him, just way better than everyone else. So it's adjusting to that. It's not doing too much. It's taking what the defense gives you. It's understanding the coverages that you're seeing. And I think the mental part for him, that's going to define his ceiling. But in year one, to me, it's about the floor. And it's about just being good. Can you be good? And then mix in those big plays along the way. And I think his week one to week 17 growth is all about the mental part, because no one should really have any questions about him physically, right? Like, he can accomplish anything on the football field he wants to do, as long as he protects his body. Please protect your body this year, but also mentally get to the point where a lot of things are back of the hand type of nature and you're not really having to process that much. And then next year, hopefully introduce like a second part of the offense where it's a little bit more advanced and you're seeing growth of his game over the middle of the field and more advanced complex scheme things.
And you do so much evaluating, spend so much time, you know, trying to figure out what data is important, what bits of performance are important, you know, when you're coming up with rankings and everything like that. Just curious how you evaluate the preseason, right? It's so hard to get, you know, this inexact science where the opponent isn't trying to 100% stop you and you're trying to figure something out. Coaches are looking at various things. Lineups are inconsistent. How do you evaluate what you saw in the preseason? I mean, you could throw a grade on something, but like, big picture, what does that mean in terms of, you know, somebody's career?
Yeah, I think that part is really difficult, because if you don't know whether a coaching staff is really trying to put a guy in a position to succeed, or if you're trying to put them in a position where you're testing them to see what more they can do. And we don't have all the access to the practices and what they don't get to necessarily work through in practices. So I think that's the hard part that you want to see, especially now in like three games. And one of these games, you had a guy have three snaps or three passes, right? So how do you really evaluate that and what they are putting on a guy's plate, especially from a quarterback standpoint, but even from anyone's standpoint, I want to see, are they uncomfortable in the role? And what could that possibly mean for that player moving forward? Is that person just not being put into a position to succeed on purpose? Or is this more a byproduct of not being a good fit? And if it's not a good fit, you will probably see that bleed into the regular season and you'll see issues throughout the way. But in just a preseason, you know, picture, it is difficult because you're hoping that the coaching staff isn't, you can't show everything, right? Like, you're not going to game plan to show everything that you have, but you're hoping that they're putting them in a spot to succeed. And if they're not succeeding and they're like, these aren't play calls that generally work for that guy and it's just not going, then you start to get a little bit of red alerts to say, okay, maybe this isn't the right fit. Maybe the player is not processing physically or mentally the way that you need to. So you're not looking for the huge performances, because generally that's not going to be really helpful for the regular season. But at the same time, you can't have a guy go out there and almost look like Nix or Bo Nix. You saw that stuff, and it's like, you don't want to look nervous on the field. You don't want to be questioning yourself either. So you want to see the confidence. Some of it's like, if it's like drops or interceptions, I think you can forgive those a lot easier than someone that might seem afraid of what's happening around them.
Ian Valentino is with us on G&D. Before we let you go, the prospects is one of the gigs at the 33rd team. College football and studying the game at that level is the other. We are going to the 12-team playoff this year. We've got conference realignment that's happening all over the country. Those are the main storylines. What are the tiers for the teams at the top of the college football landscape going into the season? Obviously, Georgia and Ohio State are at the top of everybody's rankings, but how do those tiers break down?
Yeah, I would start with those two. I think that is its own tier, as easy as it is to say. And then I think people are maybe, I know they're number four, so it's not like you're talking about, you know, being, you know, overlooked too much. But I think Texas might be getting a little bit underplayed because they did lose some guys to the NFL, but at the same time, they brought a lot of transfers in, and their recruiting numbers are crazy over the last couple of years. I think Sarkisian's got that program in a good spot. I would put them with Oregon. I think those two are the solid second tier, and that's it. Like, to me, if you're looking at potential championship teams, I think it's those four teams.
Wow.
I don't necessarily see a team that's beyond that outside of like some crazy evolution.
So not Alabama, Ole Miss, Michigan, nothing like that, huh?
Nope. I think they're all in that next tier. I'd put Alabama, Ole Miss. I'm not really buying the hype fully on them yet. We got to see it from Lane Kiffin first. It's a good roster, but a lot of transfers that generally doesn't do a lot. Michigan, they're just replacing so many people. Penn State's a good team. Notre Dame, I mean, they're going to make the playoff, but do they have that super high level to be able to compete with these teams? I just don't think they do. I don't think they have the roster depth. I don't think they have the talent in the trenches, and that's where it all comes down to. As excited as I am for the playoff, there's so much turnover. Florida State lost so much. LSU lost so much. I mean, maybe Tennessee, maybe that's a team. If Nico can come in, the freshman quarterback, and, you know, put on his best Johnny Manziel hat and do some crazy stuff, maybe. But barring like Jalen Milroe turning into Lamar Jackson or something like that, I just don't see these teams having enough in the coaching department, because that's part of it with Nick Saban retiring. But then also, I think from a depth perception, like that has become very difficult with the transfer portal, where these teams, if you start to lose one or two, three starters, it's going to really put some of these teams at risk of losing games that they can't afford to.
Ian, great convo, man. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, be good. Ian Valentino of the 33rd team here on Grant and Danny. It seems like the Commanders have a pretty large roster problem that nobody's talking about. Like a real issue with their personnel that needs to be solved before week one. Let's do that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
G&D on the Fan at 4 o'clock, your Beltway Blitz, 30 minutes from right now. And at 5 o'clock, Ian O'Connor, the author of four best-selling books. He's hoping for a fifth with his new biography on Aaron Rodgers. We will talk to him coming up in 90 minutes right here on The Fan. Yesterday, when we slotted this into the rundown, we didn't know that Ramiz Ahmed was going to be released. But it only adds to the conversation, I think. The Commanders seem to have a kicking problem. And it seems to be going under the radar a little bit. The guy that they like more, as I think most of us have known all along just because of the back of the football card showing some kicks in the league, Riley Patterson missed his only field goal attempt in the game.
Yep.
Ramiz Ahmed actually made his kick, but my read on it was that they wanted Patterson to kind of win the job and sprint and run away with it. Now, all of this is for naught because Ramiz Ahmed's already been released, so they've kind of showed their hand that Riley Patterson is at least for the moment the guy. But Danny, in addition to missing his only field goal in the game, Patterson had a really rough day at practice, apparently, when they got back on the field for the first time yesterday and missed some kicks and clinked some balls off the uprights. Ahmed, in that practice, also really struggled. But this is being brought up now to say this is not something that in the season can be a big issue. You have to solve this right here and right now. Do you think they're just waiting for another kicker to get cut and that the starter's not on the team? Do you think that they think Patterson can be the answer and they just think he's been inconsistent in practice and now 0-for-1 in a game? Like, how do they get this solved? Because I know people like to downplay the kicking situation and roll their eyes when we talk about it. We have seen it cost this team games for many, many years.
Indeed. They don't seem to be too worried the way that they've behaved. Right? I mean, they thought they had it solved with Brandon McManus. We know what happened. So now you're kind of in a position you didn't anticipate.
Can I push back on that a little bit, or at least ask the question? When you say they don't seem to be worried based on how they're behaving, what could they have done differently to make you know that they acknowledge this is an issue?
Constant kicker being brought in to work out. So every person that's kicked a football over the last however many years, like within the time that Martavius Bryant last caught a pass to now, that person, if you kick the ball, please come to Ashburn immediately.
So they had workouts and then signed Patterson. You're saying they should be having workouts every few days.
Or I mean hyperbolic, but more than, hey, we signed Ahmed. It's fine for now. It's not fine for now. What are we doing?
And this kind of brings me back to my original point. I get the sense, based on the way they've handled this, with Ramiz Ahmed, who's never kicked in an NFL game, and then Patterson, who was available, who struggled off and on, keeping a gig. They think somebody's going to get cut who is in a tier above these guys.
And that's my viewpoint, right? Is that I don't know where there are places where there are two kickers right now. I don't know if you just, if somebody's trying to beat out Justin Tucker in Baltimore, you just take that guy. I don't know what's going on, but they don't, I keep coming back to this, they don't seem too worried about this. And I'm puzzled by that. There are a few positions, this is one of them. I'd probably put it as the third one, where they just seem to think they seem very comfortable that this is just going to work out. Whether it's eventually, you know, whether Coleman's healthy or not, maybe we'll just find a left tackle. Maybe we just will. Or we'll see what happens at receiver. If Dotson bounces back, then we'll have something. They don't seem very urgent at a couple spots. They seem urgent at others. They showed you very clearly, we need an upgraded linebacker. We need more cornerbacks. We need to fix that center position, the left guard position. They went out and found some people to fill roles. Dozens of free agents were signed that are going to be on this roster. They didn't do that for a couple different spots where I think a reasonable person would be able to draw the conclusion, hey, these are not strong suits for this football team. This might even be perceived as an area of weakness. What's your concern level? At 2, 3, we'll hold some tryouts. We'll get one of like the fifth or sixth best kickers from the XFL to come in. Interesting. That's all I could say.
I wonder if Brandon Aubrey's success with the Cowboys last year, who's a former professional soccer player who kicked in a spring league. Dallas worked him out and said, oh, we'll give this former Notre Dame kicker a try. Last year, he might have been the best kicker in the league. He was 36 of 38 with a long of 60. 36 of 38. He ended up missing a couple extra points late, but I think he was like 49 of 50 to start the year on extra points or something like that last season as well. He was incredible. I wonder if Dan Quinn being in Dallas and that guy going from not having kicked one time in the NFL to the best kicker in the league colors how you feel about like the urgency or how hard it is to find these guys. I would imagine some part of how you view things is just your past experiences. And he was in a building last year where they basically went and got their Ramiz Ahmed, and he became the best kicker in the NFL. And maybe he just thinks that's a way to do it.
Yeah, so bring in my XFL guys. Where are they? You know, who's left over? Like, they're just, that's Riley Patterson for now until it's not. Someone will shake free. Just seems very cavalier to me. And listen, if there's an ace in the hole, if there's some sort of excellent move, or if Patterson's just needs a couple weeks to get his sea legs underneath him and he'll be, you know, very consistent, that's great. But it seems to be an issue where, and listen, this is not a Super Bowl caliber team. This is not a team that's really going to compete at a high level, where if you lose a game by a field goal, to me, it's not the end of the world. It's more about Jaden Daniels and his development. But even still, just helping to reinforce some of the things that you're trying to implement here with a culture change, you'd rather have that field goal go in. You'd rather that extra point not cost you a winnable game here or there. It's a fixable thing that they seem to think will just get fixed at some point.
I guess part of it is a lot of these kickers in the spring leagues that are really good have problems on kickoffs. Like, I was asking someone about, remember the Defenders kicker, Matthew McCrane, had a huge year. We had him on the show.
Yep.
He hit a couple 50-yarders in a game. Well, his thing has been, you know, basically that his accuracy and his leg strength on kicking field goals was always successful, but maybe there were questions about the kickoffs. But with the new kickoff rules and the fact that guys like him might be able to have hang time, and I don't know. I would just be willing to give him a look after you went 5 of 5 from 40 plus and hit a bunch of 50 yarders and were, you know, 8 of 8 in your NFL career, whatever it was. Like, how does that guy not have a phone call when he was in your own backyard? But I just know that having one on the roster when the one is not a convincing answer is never a good idea. And maybe they're going to work guys out tomorrow and they're going to have a second and they're bringing someone else in who's the favorite. Maybe he's got minus odds to become the starting kicker over Riley Patterson. But the kicker they have left was 0-for-1 in the preseason game and has bounced all over the
place. And it wasn't a 60-yarder either.
And did not have a great day of practice yesterday, I think it was.
This is very Rivera-esque. Remember when there were kicking issues and the kicks weren't being made and we heard about it in practice and we heard about it and then it manifested in a preseason game, early season. And they just, it'll be fine until it wasn't. It's almost like Rivera at the time couldn't be bothered with it. Then finally goes, fine, Chris Blewett, we'll do that. And then that, of course, was a disaster. It to me, just doesn't seem, I don't see the urgency. And I guess I keep going back to the same thing. And I wish I had a better point to make about it. But that's how it looks from the outside looking in. They know more than I do. It's not as if there's a great crop of free agent kickers just sitting there waiting. I mean, Randy Bullock, I think, is available. Kicked last year for the Giants. He's been around. Not great at this point, but nobody is. It's all kind of picked over. I understand that you're left in an adverse spot. The guy that you thought was going to solve the problem, something happened that you didn't know about. I get it. I'm not faulting them for what happened with McManus. But here and now, there'd be, if I'm in charge, and I shouldn't be, but if I was, there'd be a lot more desperation. I'd be burning up the phones a little bit more. There'd be a lot more working out. There'd be a lot more bodies kicking, putting foot to ball on my newly refurbished turf field there in Ashburn.
To me, it just feels like it's currently an issue. I don't know what they're doing, what work they're putting in to solve it. They may already have talked to an agent who's given them an idea. We think our guy's getting cut in this place. And when he does, he'll come to you and we'll get a deal in place and we'll get you your kicker. And they just are, because of that, they just need to get to that point. Because whoever that kicker is going to be here right before the start of the season. So because I don't know what they're setting up and what kind of work they're putting in, I don't want to question their urgency or their aggressiveness in this regard. What I will do, though, is say the status quo at kicker is not good enough. A competition between Patterson and Ahmed was not a good one. And it's already over. And now the guy that won it is the one that actually missed, not made, the field goal in the preseason game. Like, one guy missed, one guy made. The guy that I actually think is better is the one that missed, and they obviously think the same thing. Based on being out of practice, you see how he strikes the ball. He's the guy that's actually kicked in the NFL. He was the favorite. So they got rid of the other guy. Fine. The one that made the field goal. No problem. Probably not the answer. But something has to give here still. They've got to solve this in some other way. And I would just be interested to know what their plan is going forward. The other thing is, remember, and you cited this at the very, very top of this conversation. It's not like they don't care about kicker. They spent good money on Brandon McManus.
Yeah.
Who's one of the best kickers in the league over many, many years and one of the big legs in the National Football League. And they brought him in here, not knowing that there was going to be an allegation coming forward of sexual harassment and alleged assault and him acting a fool, allegedly drinking on a team flight. And so they released him right away. Now, we could have a conversation, and we have on this show in the past, and we will in the future again. Should people lose their jobs based on an allegation before any kind of further investigation is done? But the fact is, they didn't like that he didn't tell them that this was coming. They didn't like that he didn't approach them at all with his side of the story, that they just found out when we all did based on this report. And they got blindsided by it, so they cut him immediately. But as soon as that happened and you decide to release the guy over the allegation, well, now you're behind the eight ball. And
yeah,
you're still there, by the way. They have not fixed this.
And that's it. You thought it was solved, and that's through no fault of your own, and now it's not. Just to give you an idea, Green Bay currently has a kicking competition, I think, between Greg Joseph and Anders Carlson, right? Maybe you're waiting for the loser of that one to come to
totally.
Your roster.
Like, Greg Joseph gets cut, who misses an extra point once every 3 weeks. I know this because he kicked for the Vikings the last couple of years, and he incessantly missed extra points. Having said that, when Greg Joseph is available, he's a lot better than Riley Patterson, and he has the leg to be good from 60.
And so maybe that's the plan. Here's the difference, again, between me and them. And again, I'm just a dude. I would still have so many people all the time come in and work out and kick. All the entire UFL cadre of kickers. anybody that's been decent at some point, whoever's floating around, you're getting brought in for workouts. I'm not just doing the, I keep calling Riz Ahmed. I'm not just doing that for months at a time, which is what they did. Then they brought in Riley Patterson, you know, once training camp got going. Just not how I would go about it when I don't have it solved. When I've got McManus, it's solved. I don't have that now. I have uncertainty there, and I would just keep throwing things at the wall, whereas they seem to be far more patient. And maybe that's to the good.
A star wide receiver potentially this year. Really good offense, brought in a speedster to help make some plays. He's going to be out longer than anticipated after an injury this week. We'll give you that update, and then we'll get you your double play next as soon as we return on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Our double play every day at this time. Driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. It is time to figure out what's going on in our lives. Nothing to do with sports.
As you know, I just got back from the beach. Mentally, I'm still there to a degree. And I was just going to run down a couple different sort of beach items and things. Today's item, thinking about the beach, I think there are several snack foods that are that much better when eaten on the beach. I don't know why. I don't know what that factor is. I don't know how we sort of quantify it. But for example, Cheetos are delicious everywhere all the time. But when they're beach carrots, you're eating them on the beach, it's somehow that much better when your feet are in the sand, you're eating them right by the ocean.
What is that, a beach carrot? Is a Cheeto?
Yeah, it's just a funny name. The kids call them beach carrots.
Okay.
They're Cheetos.
I've never heard that. Yeah. Is that a thing or is that a Ruyé thing?
Might be a Ruyé thing, I don't know. Okay. But the kids call them beach carrots. Something I slept on. The peanut. In the shell, cracking the shell and eating the peanuts on the beach. I love that anyway. I love going to the ballpark and doing that and just, you know, leaving the giant shell carcass outline of my feet. It's the greatest. Doing that on the beach and digging a little hole and putting the shells in was amazing. Mm. I'm going to submit the peanut in the shell, so a bag of peanuts that you can crack and eat right there on the beach, as an all-time beach snack that it's at least slept on, but I think deserves a little more credit. That's what I got for you.
I could see that because you're sitting there. You're enjoying yourself in the sun,
mm-hmm.
comfortable in a chair. You got nowhere to be.
Yep.
Got nothing but time. And what better way to pass some of that time than just a time-consuming snack, essentially?
It's salty. You got your crunch, right? And you eat one, it means you got to eat the next one because of the salt factor. It makes you thirsty. You're drinking your beverage. It was wonderful. It became kind of my go-to throughout the week.
The only hole I would poke in your theory is, I don't know if anything is bad on a beach.
I know.
I don't know if any food gets worse on a beach. I think you're hungry. I think, you know, you're out in the sun, you're going to and from the water,
mm-hmm.
or if like you're like me and you got kids, you're chasing them around or you're playing catch or whatever it is. But you know what's great on the beach? Or this used to be what we would do going out on a boat or something on the water. But my mom would pack up lunch and she would make sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were like bologna and cheese kids pretty
sure.
much.
Sure, yeah, of course.
But whatever the sandwich is, you just do a sandwich, she cut it, you know, in half or whatever, and Or you do a hoagie or something, and you pull it out of a little wrap, plastic bag, something, and just a sandwich that was made like hours ago,
yeah.
where the meat and the cheese are kind of melding together.
It's like 15% better than if it was in your dumb kitchen.
It's so much better.
Why is it so much better?
But I'm even thinking about just pretzels, like eating just a salty or like a potato chip. Mm-hmm. Anything on the beach just plays.
The crunchy snack on the beach is amazing. But you're right about the sandwich. Like everything at a minimum is 15% better on the beach than it is back at the house where it was made. That's another reason. I don't know why that is, but I don't question it. It's like being in the middle of a no-hitter.
So no alcohol, Ruyé. What do you drink on the beach?
A big featured player this week? The Liquid Death line of beverages.
What is that?
That is a, in my humble opinion, the kind of like a better version of the LaCroix that everybody does. Like LaCroix is solid because it's like it gives you the feeling like you're drinking soda.
Flavored bubble water.
Yeah, the flavored bubble water. The Liquid Death, it's a bigger canister. It means business, right? And I've enjoyed those a little bit more. And that was a big feature player this week. I had a lot of severed lime this week from Liquid Death.
If there was a food or drink that I could touch a button and make myself like. I think that kind of genre, that bubble water, like LaCroix, would be at the top of the list. Because if I could find a way to have that replace diet soda for me, and I could just drink bubble water and get some of that same sensation.
Because I'd need it.
It would be so important for me. It's just a significant life change. I don't like the taste. That metallic.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it other than.
But everyone knows exactly what you mean.
Fake water, like bubble. It's an awful taste. I've never liked it. Going back to sitting down at a restaurant 10 years ago, and they come over and they're like, do you want tap water or Pellegrino? No, I don't. I don't want. I hate that taste.
The LaCroix is one of those things where it's like, we know who you are. You're a soda addict that doesn't want to drink soda. Here, try this. It's a little bit metallic.
But you can get by. Soda addicts, when they drink it, like it. It is a soda replacement for a lot of people. Why don't I like it?
I don't see. I'm gonna push back. I don't think it's a like.
Okay.
I think it gives me enough of the feeling that I want. It's not real.
But they don't dislike it. Like you don't taste LaCroix and say, oh, this is gross. I have never been able to finish a can. I have never been able to take two or three really good gulps and not hate it. I don't like the taste.
So
actively.
To me, where you should be focusing your energy, the Wave Soda, right? Remember Wave Soda?
I remember it well.
They're delicious. A local DC guy invented it. They're really, really good because it's a little bit of fruit juice with some carbonation. And the Liquid Death, give those a try. I think you'd like them.
Those are more my speed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not water. But that metallic taste to the water just ruins it. So did you do only those? You weren't doing anything else?
No, we had some Spindrift going, some water going. I mean, everything under the sun.
You're out on diet sodas as well for the most part.
That to me is the last thing I would ever do. Like if I'm going to have a soda, I'm going to have a soda. The diet soda, also terrible for you with like replacement fake ingredients. So it's like there's no sugar. There's just this carcinogen that's terrible for you.
I'm not suggesting it's not bad for you, but I think for most people, you'd rather the fake bad stuff that's bad also than just
bad for different
unbelievable
reasons.
Amount of sugar.
To a degree. I mean, the like unnatural thing where it's like, look, it's low sugar, but it's high in this thing that's horrendous for your kidney or whatever.
Also from a weight standpoint, like if you drink regular soda, good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, just
good night.
You might as well just take shot glasses filled with sugar and just pour them down your gullet.
We should do that, by the way.
Sounds really good.
Shot glass of sugar?
The Beltway Blitz comes your way next. Want to talk about Cliff Kingsbury's offense in the 4 o'clock hour on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. Our double play every day at this time. Driven to you by your local Washington area Honda dealer. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. It is time to figure out what's going on in our lives. Nothing to do with sports.
As you know, I just got back from the beach. Mentally, I'm still there to a degree. And I was just going to run down a couple different sort of beach items and things. Today's item, thinking about the beach, I think there are several snack foods that are that much better when eaten on the beach. I don't know why. I don't know what that factor is. I don't know how we sort of quantify it. But for example, Cheetos are delicious everywhere all the time. But when they're beach carrots, you're eating them on the beach, it's somehow that much better when your feet are in the sand, you're eating them right by the ocean.
What is that? A beach carrot is a Cheeto?
Yeah, it's just a funny name. The kids call them beach carrots.
Okay.
And they're Cheetos.
I've never heard that. Yeah. Is that a thing or is that a Ruye thing?
Might be a Ruye thing. I don't know.
Okay.
But the kids call them beach carrots. Something I slept on. The peanut in the shell, cracking the shell and eating the peanuts on the beach. I love that anyway. I love going to the ballpark and doing that and just, you know, leaving the giant shell carcass outline of my feet. It's the greatest. Doing that on the beach and digging a little hole and putting the shells in was amazing. Mm. I'm going to submit the peanut in the shell, so a bag of peanuts that you can grab and eat right there on the beach, as an all-time beach snack that it's at least slept on, but I think deserves a little more credit. That's what I got for you.
I could see that because you're sitting there. You're enjoying yourself in the sun, comfortable in a chair. You got nowhere to be.
Yep.
Got nothing but time. And what better way to pass some of that time than just a time-consuming snack, essentially.
It's salty. You got your crunch, right? And you eat one, it means you got to eat the next one because of the salt factor. It makes you thirsty. You're drinking your beverage. It was wonderful. It became kind of my go-to throughout the week.
The only hole I would poke in your theory is, I don't know if anything is bad on a beach.
I know.
I don't know if any food gets worse on a beach. I think you're hungry. I think, you know, you're out in the sun, you're going to and from the water,
mm-hmm.
or if like you're like me and you got kids, you're chasing them around or you're playing catch or whatever it is. But you know what's great on the beach? Or this used to be what we would do going out on a boat or something on the water. But my mom would pack up lunch and she would make sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were like bologna and cheese kids pretty much.
Sure, yeah, of course.
But whatever the sandwich is, you just do a sandwich, you cut it, you know, in half or whatever, and you you do a hoagie or something, and you pull it out of a little wrap, plastic bag, something, and just a sandwich that was made like hours ago,
yeah.
where the meat and the cheese are kind of melding together.
It's like 15% better than if it was in your dumb kitchen.
It's so much better.
Why is it so much better?
But I'm even thinking about just pretzels, like eating just a salty or like a potato chip. Mm-hmm. Anything on the beach just plays.
The crunchy snack on the beach is amazing. But you're right about the sandwich. Like, everything at a minimum is 15% better on the beach than it is back at the house where it was made. That's another reason. I don't know why that is, but I don't question. It's like being in the middle of a no-hitter.
So no alcohol, Ruye. What do you drink on the beach?
You know, a big featured player this week? The Liquid Death line of beverages.
What is that?
That is a, in my humble opinion, the kind of like a better version of the LaCroix that everybody does. Like, LaCroix is solid because it's like it gives you the feeling like you're drinking soda.
Flavored bubble water.
Yeah, a little flavored bubble water. The Liquid Death, it's a bigger canister. It means business, right? And I've enjoyed those a little bit more. And that was a big feature player this week. I had a lot of severed lime this week from Liquid Death.
If there was a food or drink that I could touch a button and make myself like, I think that kind of genre, that mm-hmm. bubble water, like LaCroix, would yep. be at the top of the list. Because if I could find a way to have that replace diet soda for me, and I could just drink bubble water and get some of that same sensation.
Because mm-hmm. I need it.
It would be so important for me. It's just a significant life change. I don't like the taste. That metallic.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it but
everyone knows exactly what you mean.
Fake water, mm-hmm. like bubble. It's an awful taste. I've never liked it. Going back to sitting down at a restaurant 10 years ago, and they come over and they're like, do you want tap water or Pellegrino? No, I don't. I hate that taste.
Mm-hmm. The LaCroix is one of those things where it's like, we know who you are. You're a soda addict that doesn't want to drink soda. Here, try this. It's a little bit metallic.
But I think you can get by. Soda addicts, mm-hmm. when they drink it, like it. It is a soda replacement for a lot of people. Why don't I like it?
I don't see, I'm gonna push back. I don't think it's a like.
Okay.
I think it gives me enough of the feeling that I want. It's not real.
But they don't dislike it. Like, you don't taste
LaCroix
and say, oh, this is gross. I have never been able to finish a can. I have never been able to take two or three really good gulps and not hate it. I don't like the taste actively.
To me, where you should be focusing your energy, the Wave Soda, right? Remember Wave Soda?
I remember it well.
The delicious local DC guy invented it. They're really, really good because it's a little bit of fruit juice with some carbonation. And the Liquid Death, give those a try. I think you'd like them.
Those are more my speed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not water. But that metallic taste to the water just ruins it. So did you do only those? You weren't doing anything else?
No, we had some Spindrift going. Had some water going. I mean, everything under the sun.
You're out on diet sodas as well for the most part.
That to me is the last thing I would ever do. Like, if I'm going to have a soda, I'm going to have a soda. The diet soda, also terrible for you, with, like, replacement fake ingredients. So it's like, there's no sugar. There's just this carcinogen that's terrible for you.
I'm not suggesting it's not bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for most people, you'd rather the fake bad stuff that's bad also than just
bad for different reasons.
Unbelievable amount of sugar.
To a degree. I mean, yeah, the like, unnatural thing where it's like, look, it's low sugar, but it's high in this thing that's horrendous for your kidney or whatever.
Also, from a weight standpoint.
Yeah.
Like, if you drink regular soda, good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, just
good night.
You might as well just take shot glasses filled with sugar and pour them down your gullet.
We should do that, by the way.
Sounds really good.
Shot glass of sugar?
The Beltway Blitz comes your way next. Want to talk about Cliff Kingsbury's offense in the 4 o'clock hour on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.